Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you on this Wednesday morning, August the 12th, 2020, 8:12:20, 14 minutes past the hour, and we have got a great show for you today. Just a little side note, coming up next hour, we are going to be joined by the mayor of the city of Marion, Scott Schertzer. Very important interview. We're going to get a COVID-19 update for the city of Marion. Also talk about the Presidential Library, the President Harding Presidential Library, which was set to open this September, which has now been postponed because of the COVID-19 pandemic. This was all, of course, part of the 100-year celebration of the anniversary of the election of President Harding. That has been postponed. We will talk to the mayor about that, as well as one of our judges. I know you have seen the protest and heard the stories all over the state of Ohio. One of our judges, Judge Warren, is set to face trial here in Marion on some charges regarding an accident in which he is presumptively assumed to have left the scene with his wife, and now Mayor Schertzer has called for his resignation. So we will talk about that. That accident, by the way, happened early in the month of June. So we'll talk about all that next hour. Now, the first hour this morning, we have got a ton to talk about because, as you know, yesterday, unless you've been living under a rock, Joe Biden finally chose his running mate, 1 week, less than 1 week, before the Democratic National Convention, which this year will be virtual. We're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about COVID-19. We're going to talk about President Trump, and with 90 days, less than 90 days until the election of 2020, how's that all going? The press conference he gave yesterday after Biden's vice presidential candidate was chosen. A whole lot of stuff to talk about, but as you know, the vice presidential candidate that was chosen yesterday was the junior senator from the great state of California since 2017, Senator Kamala Harris, who was in the Democratic primary this past year, but dropped out before Iowa. Why did that happen? She was a big, big front runner in the beginning. It's all interesting, a lot to talk about over the next 45 minutes, and nobody better to talk about it with than longtime ABC News correspondent. He has interviewed Donald Trump. He knows Joe Biden. He knows all of the players. He questioned President Clinton. He questioned Richard Nixon. He has questioned them all, and we're so glad he's here today. And of course, I'm sure you remember him, top 10 news magazine in the 1990s, Primetime Live, and of course with Cokie Roberts co-hosting the Sunday morning show on ABC. A pleasure it always is to welcome to these microphones Sam Donaldson. Sam, how are you?
Well, I'm fine, but I just missed interviewing Warren G. Harding. That was earlier. Scott, before we jump in to all of those topics, is there a hum on this line, or is it just my head?
No, you sound good, Sam.
Hmm?
You sound good.
Okay, fine. Wonderful. Well, yes. And your first question to me is, what do I think about the PIP? I think it's exactly right for the election prospects for the Biden ticket, Biden-Harris ticket. Black woman. Woman, yes, he'd already promised that. And the question was, did it have to be a black woman? Well, I don't think it had to be, but I think it gives him the great, huge benefit of turnout from the African-American community. And I can go over the figures with you if you want, but it's clear that Hillary Clinton lost for a number of reasons. But one of the big ones was, while she got the majority of the African-Americans who voted, not enough voted. Not the percentage that voted for Barack Obama in his two elections, and I predict a percentage that's going to be quite high in this next one.
Senator Kamala Harris, obviously an historic choice, female, vice president, African-American. How historic is this?
Very much so. Let's face it, Barack Obama's ascendancy to the presidency was a very historic moment, but it did not transform completely at all our election prospects, as you saw in 2016. I think this ticket, if it is successful, and I think at the moment the odds are it will be successful, but we'll see, I think this ticket would be transformational, not only for the Democratic Party, but for the country as a whole, because let's face it, if they succeed, and if Joe Biden, as many of us believe, would serve only one term voluntarily, Kamala Harris will be the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party, and on the wave of African-American support, and the support of others, obviously, could be elected. And that is different from the Obama election. Two historic differences, but Obama's was singular, and this could be transformational for the party and for the country in the future.
The age problem that Joe Biden has. Joe Biden will turn 78 years old on November 20th. If he wins on November 3rd, when he takes office, he will be 78 years old, by far the oldest president ever elected. At the end of his first term, God willing, he would be 82 years old. Is there any chance he would run for a second term?
Well, there's a chance. There's always a chance. If you look around the world, there have been several world leaders in our recent times, or at least in my lifetime, who've been in their 80s. Conrad Adenauer, I just won't go over a whole list. But I think it's not the thing we should do. I'm in my 87th year. And let's face it, folks, I'm dropping a stitch now and then, more than now and then. You don't want someone my age, no matter how smart they have been, and I'm not talking about myself. Let's just talk about Joe Biden, for instance. How well they have been able to do their job as a politician, as a member of the Senate, in his case. When you get to that point, you want a younger person, more vibrant, with more energy, more new ideas, the future, if you will. And so I would suspect Biden would voluntarily give it up. And, of course, anoint, as we would see now, if they're successful, Kamala Harris for the next shot at the presidency.
Sam, it's very interesting because there was a lot of talk and a lot of thought given to Joe Biden picking a state that Hillary Clinton couldn't win, picking his vice presidential candidate from a state that Hillary Clinton did not win in 2016. And Michigan was a big one. A lot of talk went on with their governor. We thought maybe that was going to be the pick. Certainly Joe Biden is going to win California. He doesn't need Senator Harris for that. So why this choice strategically?
Yeah, but he gets what he needs in 2020. This isn't 1960, when Speaker Sam Rayburn, the great Democratic Speaker of the House, said to John Kennedy, who's just been nominated for the presidential role, you can put Lyndon Johnson from Texas on the ticket and win, or you can not put him on the ticket and lose. What do you want to do? And, of course, Kennedy, over the objection of his brother Bobby, strenuous objection, put Johnson on the ticket and won. Now, those days are gone. It's been a long time since someone has been selected to be put on the ticket from the state. Sarah Palin from Alaska for John McCain? Are you kidding? Let's pass over her. I don't want to. Why should I bash her any more than she's been bashed? Or Tom Eagleton, first for George McGovern from Missouri, and then, of course, had to be replaced when it was discovered he'd had some shock therapy for depression. I mean, those days are gone. And what Biden needs was a huge African-American vote. Let me give you a statistic. I said I had it in mind, and I've had this in mind for 3 years or more now. In Barack Obama's election, he won both times with 200,000 more votes in the Philadelphia suburbs over John McCain and Mitt Romney. Hillary Clinton got almost none of them. Now, why? Did they vote for Trump? No, they didn't vote. They're going to vote this time. They are going to vote this time is a prediction that I can make, I think, with certainty. The African-American community is energized. It certainly was for President Obama. But the thought now of the first woman, and, you know, she's mixed, Asian, Indian, and then African American from Jamaica, the first woman, black woman, to be on the ticket and then have a shot at the presidency in her own right. And if that were to succeed, Scott, and the Democratic Party now is a coalition of many groups, but the African-American group, a minority population in the United States, would have not a veto every time, but it would be the major player, despite its small size compared to other racial makeups, for the Democratic Party, and presumably, perhaps, even for the nation.
Politics are certainly changing, as you said, strategically. It doesn't matter a whole lot which state your vice presidential candidate comes from. But when we look at the idea of the bottom of the ticket, it used to be said people vote for the top of the ticket, not the bottom. Is that the case anymore?
No, that's right. That's what we're talking about. Now, people normally... Johnson is, in my lifetime, the only vice presidential nominee who's made the difference, or even made a major difference. I mean, all of the losses, both parties, you cannot attribute to the vice presidential pick. I've mentioned Sarah Palin, again, without trying to bash her. She didn't cause John McCain's loss. But she certainly didn't help overcome his problems, either. I mean, he lost it on his own, and Obama won it on his own. So all those old ways that we political reporters and others used to look at this are out the window. Now, I've given you a roadmap for the future that could occur, but I'm not certain it's going to occur. I'm not certain that this ticket will win, although I believe it will. And I'm not certain then that, I hope I'm certain that President Biden, if that's who it is, will give up after one term. I'm not absolutely certain that Kamala Harris would then be the nominee of the party, but on track as we see now, she would be, or that she would win. But that's one scenario that I believe is more like the future than any of the ones that you have properly talked about as being the past scenarios on selection of vice president candidates and their impact on the ticket.
We know we're very close to the election with the pandemic going on. A lot of people, I don't think, realize that, but we are very close to the election. On the Republican side, we are going to have Vice President Pence. That's who's going to be the vice presidential, obviously, candidate on the Republican side. That debate will happen at some point. How do those two fare up, Senator Harris and Mike Pence?
All right. Having talked about the selection of Kamala Harris based on race, let's talk about qualifications. A lot of times, vice presidential nominees are put on the ticket without any really great thought about if they became president the day after the inauguration. Could they do the job? Are they qualified? She is, I think, by all the measures that we could normally use, although no one can predict how someone will actually turn out to be as president until they are. She has the background as a prosecutor. She has a background as an attorney general. She knows the law. She has a background in the Senate. I was looking at her committees just to refresh my... Here were her committees. And she's a first-termer, granted. Budget Committee, Homeland Security, Judiciary, Intelligence. Now, that's a group of committees that, except for foreign relations, but you get a lot of it on all those, that's a group of committees that make up what run the government and what we look to for expertise for someone that we'd like to see run the government. So she has that. And then you mentioned something that clearly was a factor. She's a fighter. Look who she took on in the first debate. In that first Democratic debate, when she was widely believed to be perhaps going to be the nominee because of her background and all of that, she took on Joe Biden. She whipped him. Oh, you say you worked with Southerners and segregationists? You were against forced budge, but I mean, she savaged him like Elizabeth Warren savaged Mike Bloomberg. Bloomberg just stood there. Biden, of course, answered and came back. And, of course, bore no grudge, clearly. But if Mike Pence comes up against Kamala Harris, I hope she has enough sense, and I think she does, to restrain herself. If she tries to do to him what Elizabeth Warren did successfully to Mike Bloomberg, it gets a little sympathy vote, I think, from people. But if it comes toe-to-toe with the facts, toe-to-toe with the ability to answer charges, to come back and make charges, because remember, vice presidential nominees, and this is one I think I continue to believe is going to be the case this year, they're the gut puncher. The presidential nominee is supposed to be above it all. Oh, I'm better than that, but go get him. And then the vice presidential nominee is supposed to do the job. Well, if that's still the case, she'll do the job, you bet.
Sam, you talk about that first debate in the Democratic primary this past year. I believe 2019 is when that took place. She did go after Joe Biden. It was on busing that Joe Biden was not exactly for. She gut punched him. People loved her the next day, and that was the thought, that Joe Biden is too old. He doesn't have it anymore. Those were the headlines the next day in all the newspapers. Will that come back to haunt this ticket that moment?
Well, I think, let's talk just for a moment to answer your question about President Trump's strategy. I think it's clear. He's playing to his base. He's going to continue to try to play to his base. And he thought that this man is desirable, desires, or is capable of reaching out to the broad American population. Forget about it. Now, how does he play to the base? He plays on race. Now, this is going to be the most savage campaign, I think, unless Trump just collapses and gives up, which is not in his nature, that I've seen in my lifetime. So he'll play on race. He'll attack her on race. Oh, I don't think he's going to use a nasty word. Yesterday, of course, in his first news conference after the ticket had been announced on the Democratic side, he said, well, you know, she's a nasty and nasty and disrespectful, meaning the way she treated Biden in the first debate. Well, that's going to be mild. I don't believe that he's going to use a racial epithet of some sort to attack her. But I think that the talking points will use the scenario in much darker, bleaker, and disrespectful terms that I outlined for you. Ladies and gentlemen, do you want to elect this team? Biden's bad enough, and you don't want to elect him. But just think what could happen down the line, and then his operatives do the racial scenario. That's his base. Not all of them, not all of the Trump voters, but the majority of his base think those thoughts. Clearly, they say it. It's not just Charlottesville. It's not just what we see, but what we know from all of the surveys and all of the interviews they feel. It's not just David Duke. He represents, and I interviewed him. That was a lot of fun. I asked Mr. Duke, this was 1990, I think, why did you admire Joseph Mengele? Now, you know, Joseph Mengele was the doctor at Auschwitz who made a lot of the decisions when the train enters and people got off. To the left, seemed to be strong enough to work. To the right, to the chambers now. And Dr. Mengele finally died in 1958, apparently, in Brazil on the beach from a heart attack. In any event, Mr. Duke couldn't really answer. It hadn't occurred to him that his words, which were there and could not be denied, well, he could deny it. President Trump denies much of what he says in the past, would harm him. But he's not the full panoply of Trump voters, and I say again, I do not charge that and do not believe that. But I do believe this campaign will play on race. It will play on Mexican rapists. It will play on all of those themes that Donald J. Trump used so successfully in 2016. But I think this ticket, now that she's on it, because I've always had some doubts about whether Joe is really a nice guy. Sometimes very important contests call for people who are not quite that nice. And I'm strengthened in my belief that Ticket's chances are improved with her selection.
Would there have been anybody else, in your opinion, better than her, or was she, as President Trump said, for a different reason, the number one draft pick?
Well, if it weren't so imperative to turn out a huge African-American vote, and I think it is imperative. I'm not taking anything as a person who would like to see President Trump defeated. I'm not taking anything for granted at this point, although I think the odds are improved, prove that he will be defeated. If it weren't for that, yes, I think there are many other women, but if you say, if I can find one, I want who's qualified to be president and who has the other traits that are important, but I want a black woman, I think, hands down, while there are several other very attractive black women from the standpoint of public service or the future. Stacey Abrams is mentioned in Georgia. Mayor Bottoms, of course, Atlanta. I don't think any of them have the experience or the background or the abilities that Kamala Harris brings to the ticket. So no. But if you said, well, we don't want to select a black necessarily. We think we'll get enough black votes. We want to appeal elsewhere. Well, there's several qualified white women, or some who are partially white and white not, like Senator Duckworth. Governor Whitmer, you mentioned her earlier, obviously. And I don't want to go down the whole list because I don't want to forget my own governor here in New Mexico, who is Latino. She has Grisham is her, well, it's a hyphenated last name, Lujan Grisham. She's very attractive from the standpoint of service, and I would predict, for instance, that she's handled the pandemic very well for New Mexico. She was the health commissioner before she went to Congress in the House of Representatives before she became governor. I think she's a very great candidate in the Biden presidency for top of cabinet status, Homeland Security, perhaps.
The Democratic Convention is next week. It will be a virtual convention. Vice President Biden is not going to go, as my understanding, to accept the nomination. You've been to a lot of conventions, Sam. A virtual convention, how do you see this?
Well, of course, I haven't been to one of those. Let's face it. Finally, he gave up, the president did, of trying to have a big rally, which is, he's given up, by the way, of having these big rallies in the future that helped him so much in 2016. He gave up the idea that he'd have a big rally with balloons and the festivities, and he tried several. Charlotte said no. He went to Florida and then discovered Jacksonville wasn't the right place. And now he's thinking either doing it from the south lawn of the White House, always an impressive background for a president seeking re-election, or Gettysburg. What? Abraham Lincoln? Oh, Mr. President, you have such ambitions, but that's far beyond you. Although he once said, as you recall, Scott, that he'd been the best president for African Americans since Lincoln, and perhaps even better than Lincoln. Thank you, Donald Trump. Thank you, sir.
Next week,
what would he say at Gettysburg? 47 years ago.
It'll be interesting. Let's put it that way. It'll be an interesting a few months here. But the Democratic convention next week, virtual convention. Now, Biden's speech, which will be virtual next Thursday night, will be big. But now, the vice presidential acceptance speech, and we now know it's going to be Senator Kamala Harris. But here's the lineup that night. Elizabeth Warren, Hillary Clinton, Kamala Harris. What do you make of that night next Wednesday?
Well, it says that women are the majority in the United States now. I'm just looking over the census figures. Unfortunately, the official ones are from 2010, and they're certainly outdated by now. But they have a huge percentage over men, and they're important in the election. And more, I don't have to tell you, Scott, I don't have to tell your listeners, they're smart people. Women are taking what I think is a rightful place of equality from the standpoint of jobs, eventually, and then by acceleration, I think soon, pay equality, the ability to hold high office equality, that's what we've been talking about. So, yes, I fear that of the two speeches, the one that's going to be most intensely watched and analyzed, because we know Joe Biden, he's a center-leftist, or a leftist-centerist, if you will. The question we were talking about earlier in that first debate. He had been against so-called forced busing. For busing, certainly for Brown versus Board and the desegregation of schools, but that's what she was calling him on. We see in his programs, Yes, Medicare for all? No, not let's build on Obamacare. Now, she, on the other hand, has been a firebrand recently in those areas. She was, of course, suspected by many African Americans because she sided with the police quite often in California as a prosecutor, as attorney general. And when it came to Medicare for all, she was wishy-washy, went back and forth a few months ago about whether she really, yes, she signed on to the Bernie Warren thing, but then decided that she'd misunderstood a question when everyone tried to raise their hands about whether private insurance should be abolished. Well, Biden didn't raise his hand, she raised hers. Yeah, abolish all private insurance. And then later said, well, I misunderstood the question. So we're going to all watch. Will she, and I suspect she will, understand that as the vice presidential nominee, she must publicly adhere to Joe Biden's program? She cannot say, well, you know, I like Joe Biden, and I'm glad he put me on the ticket, but I still believe X, Y, and Z. No, you don't. You can believe anything you want, in pectore, in your heart, but you don't say it. So we're going to listen to see how strong she is as a defender. You can be the defender for civil rights. You can complain about police brutality these days, absolutely, but how far would she or might she go to separate herself in any way from presidential nominee Biden. Hmm.
An interesting thing happened in the last 7 days, Sam, and I want to get your take on it, and it plays on this program a little bit. Professor Alan Lichtman, we've seen him in the New York Times. We've seen him on... Yeah, absolutely. He has predicted every presidential election correctly since 1984, including predicting President Donald Trump in 2016. He was on this program in 2016. We all said, oh, that's you're wrong. That's not going to happen. He was on Monday morning. We got to question him all the about this prediction for 2020. He says Joe Biden. What does that mean to you?
Well, he's got a good track record. That's what it means. Pardon me, I've got the cough. No, not that cough. No, I'm fine. No temperature, no, none of that. But you can always make a mistake. Just one it takes, right? I think he's right about Biden. I've been cautious in what I've said this morning. Are you sure it's not the coffee? I'm fine. All the signs at the moment point to it. But all the signs at this time in 2016, at least to me, who hadn't the clue as to what was really going on in the country, obviously, pointed to Hillary Clinton's election. And in fact, her campaign was based on a simple slogan, unsaid but felt, I'm not him. In other words, I'm not him, so obviously I'm going to win. Look at him. Is that possible? And until shortly before the election, when I realized that Lichtman was right, it looked like he was going to win, I was in that camp too. This time, I'm in the opposite camp. I believe, unless the sky falls, Chicken Little comes down, the Biden-Harris ticket is going to win. I just don't see President Trump having the ability to do anything but energize his base, which is, to me, fortunately, a minority in the country. Yes, I know. I've seen all the statistics about how they get very close, and on any given day, the president's popularity approval for that day's events goes up and what have you. And there are people who predict, particularly in the financial community, because the wish is father to the thought, that he's going to win again. But I don't think so.
It's very interesting. I think Ohio is still a swing state, but here we are under 90 days till a presidential election, and yes, it is a pandemic year. The people I talk to, the majority of the conversations, 90%, even with Democrats, hardcore Democrats here in Ohio, they're not really talking about Biden. Now, that could change with the choice of Senator Harris yesterday. They're not talking about why Biden would be a good president. They're talking about how this president needs to go. Is that really what 2020 is all about?
I think so. Yes, I think so. I mean, I think the majority of the country, I don't speak for it, but with the things and the signs that I now see, and I try to be aware of what is actually going on as to what I think should be going on, disapproves of Donald J. Trump's handling of the presidency, and particularly the pandemic handling. We have thousands of deaths that the experts say could have been avoided if he had taken this seriously in the beginning, if he had followed the advice of the scientists who have spent their life studying this problem. But instead, he encourages unscientific thought. He encourages and denigrates, at the moment, now, Tony Fauci's on his list, our top epidemiologist, head of the infectious division at NIH. Here's a man who is ignorant. It seems to me these days, my friend Tom Wolfe wrote about the bonfire of the vanities. We have the bonfire of the ignorant going on. Excuse me. I know I'm hurling names, but the governor of Florida, let me just give you, I was looking at the paper this morning, in case you asked me about some wild thing. There's a sheriff in Florida named Brian Marks who has banned masks from his deputies, and if you come to visit the sheriff's department, you have to take off your mask. He doesn't believe in them. Well, where did you come from? What rock under which did you crawl? And how many people, with your attitude, in your own department, in visitors and all of that, may you infect with this virus? And some of them could die. And whose conscience is that on, Sheriff? These smart people who go against the grain of facts, not just science, because Trump ignores facts in other areas than science. I don't know what they're thinking of, these QAnon people. Do you know what QAnon is?
No, I don't.
Well, I didn't for a long time. Apparently, there is a mysterious figure, unknown, unseen, but many people start to believe, who had been in the government, our government, who is exposing the truth behind an international conspiracy. Some days aimed at Donald J. Trump, other days in support of Donald J. Trump. It's sort of like the pizza parlor thing in Washington. You remember that? 2 or 3 years ago, the story got going that there was a pizza parlor in Washington which Hillary Clinton had set up as a child pornography and child abuse center. And some poor guy in the South took his rifle because he cares about children. He came into the, you know. So this is QAnon. Unknown, unseen, but more and more people. Now, is it important? Well, I learned a name yesterday. Marjorie Taylor Greene. Who's Ms. Greene? She won in Georgia the GOP primary for a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. She believes in the QAnon conspiracy threats. She believes in all of that stuff. And in Georgia? Well, it's changing, but in her district, but a GOP district, but Trump won solidly in 2016. Does she go to the House of Representatives spouting this nonsense? If it were just nonsense, hey, I spout nonsense often enough. But I'm not dangerous. She's dangerous if she's in the House and she's saying that. But that's where the country, that's where people in this country, I know they're there now, but I don't understand why.
Well, this is a longer question than I normally like to ask here, but I just want to set it up for the people. Professor Lichtman, who was on, bases his predictions on 16 keys. Now, he said on Monday in his interview with us live that late 2019, President Trump was a shoo-in to be reelected. What has changed? Racial unrest and the economy. The economy short and long term, based upon the pandemic. There are people in the street in Ohio, and I'm sure everybody else, who are saying on November 4th, the pandemic will be over. This was all out to get Donald Trump, which plays into what you just said, Sam. How much of that is there?
Well, those people in Ohio who are saying this have a friend. His name is Vladimir Putin. President Putin of Russia yesterday announced that they had a vaccine now. They have found a vaccine. They're FDA, I don't even know the name of the organization, the government organization, which is like our FDA, has given it certification. Has it been proved the way we prove vaccines? Of course not. It has a phase one, about 100 people. We have several, Novavax, Moderna, INO, I mean, I can't remember all of the names of the companies in this country that are racing to try to prove a vaccine, who have shown in phase one tests that their vaccine appears to be safe, and even with T-cell production and all of that, efficacious. But we don't know, because it may not turn out when they test 30,000 people over a period of time, and it may turn out this vaccine is not safe. It may turn out that, no, the few antigens and T-cells it seems to have generated in phase one are not there in any mass that bring it up to over 50% effectiveness. Putin, however, has announced he has it. And yesterday, like blackbirds off a fence, investors in these stocks lost huge amounts of money. I mean, they just went, they plummeted down. I didn't understand that either. Use your common sense, folks. When Vladimir Putin tells you something is true, run the other way. Now, Trump doesn't feel that way, and it's going to be interesting to see today whether he begins to agree with President Putin and say maybe we should cooperate with him, see if we can buy some vaccine. I don't know. But there's nothing that you can't say, I don't know he would do that, about Donald J. Trump. He might. Mm-hmm. But you can't base it on Putin, and you can't base it on all of our scientists, all of our... I know Tony Fauci well, but I mean, he's not just him. Scratch the page of someone who has worked in their lifetime and prepared themselves to try to understand this business we're talking about. And they all agree, you cannot bank on a vaccine without the thorough testing and the earliest possibilities, maybe late this year, probably next year, before you're safe to go. Although it's true, we are now, the federal government, financing the manufacture of some of these early vaccines that are being tested, so that if one or two or three work, we've got the vaccines ready for distribution, rather than say, okay, it's now the summer of 2021, and we've got it. This one has proved out. So now, let's spend several more months seeing if we can manufacture it to save lives. No. Someone said the other day, if we're wrong, we lose money by supporting the manufacture of X, Y, or Z at the moment, because it doesn't prove to be efficacious. But if we're right, we save lives. And I'm for that.
In the last 40 years, we have had one-term president, George H.W. Bush. Now...
Jimmy Carter was before 40 years. You're right. Go ahead.
Right. But, yeah, Jimmy Carter's in there as well. Jimmy Carter's economic malaise, George H.W. Bush's economic troubles, we can go back to Herbert Hoover and the Great Depression. Is Donald Trump's Waterloo the pandemic? If the pandemic hadn't happened, would he be reelected?
Well, I think Lichtman is right. If our economy, for many Americans, certainly not for all, was still booming, if the stock market, which has come back now, for some people, obviously, was still booming, the largest bull market in history, I'm all right, Jack. A lot of people who are disgusted now with Trump, why, he's a vulgar man. Well, didn't you always know that when you had money in your pocket? Well, you know, yeah, but I've had money in my pocket. I agree with Lichtman. It would be close. And now the odds are that the president might prevail. Mm. But I think he can't reverse this. He could have reversed it early had he done the right things to try to suppress the pandemic, to flatten the curve and keep it flat. He'd be a hero. And the economy would really start coming back, rather than came back a little bit and then, whoop, in many states collapsed and nationally has reversed itself. But he can't, and he can't. He doesn't have the qualities that would allow someone to do that, either to come back that way or to alibi it. He can't explain it now. To his base, they'll believe anything he says. To the rest of the country, I can't say it's a laughingstock because it's so tragic. I just don't think he can overcome it.
When we look at this, the biggest question on a lot of people's minds is this. In 2016, almost every television reporter every poll going into the election said Hillary Clinton was going to win, and not only win, but win big. She was in states that Democrats don't normally win. Obviously, we know that didn't happen. They're saying the same things this time. The polls favor Biden. He's going to win in states that Democrats don't normally win. It's going to be a landslide. Why is this different than 2016?
Well, it's different because it's not Clinton versus an unknown Trump. Who knew Donald J. Trump? I might have heard his name. Did the steel worker out of work in Michigan, did he know a lot about Trump? When this big airplane, this big jet landed, and a man came out and said, "I'll get your job back." Well, I voted for him, too. Come on. I took his measure in 1990 when I did a long interview with him for the Primetime Live. He lied. He flim-flammed. He called me rude. I'm sorry if I was. I tried to ask a question. He called me ignorant. He said, "What do you mean I borrowed the money? What do you mean you borrowed the money? If you were smart, you'd want to see my books." I said, "Send the books. We'll have an accountant that mutually agree with it to look at him. I'm not qualified to." "Well, I said, I'm going to do that." No, he didn't say I'm going to. He said, "I might do that." Of course, I'm still waiting. I won't go over the whole interview with you, but I took his measure then, not because I'm so smart. I'm not saying I am, but because it was clear from the evidence in the street, which eventually bore out, he lost the airline, he lost the Plaza Hotel, he took a structured bankruptcy on the Taj Mahal, but his debt, the casino he built in Atlantic City, but his debt was taken over by Carl Icahn, a real billionaire. So I've been watching him ever since, and you know, he sued a reporter in 2005 for defamation. Now, had the reporter called him a pet? I mean, God, no. The reporter did a book concluding that he wasn't worth several billion dollars, maybe 250 to 500 million at most. And a smart con man knew that his business required people to believe that he was wealthy, when in fact he wasn't. That was defamation to him. So when he gave under oath, he had to give for having sued. He had to be questioned by the reporter's lawyers. He said, "Mr. Trump, how much are you worth?" "Well, I don't know." "You don't know?" "No, I don't know. Some days when I'm feeling good, I feel I'm worth more than days when I don't feel so good." He didn't mean medically, just meant from the standpoint of his view of the world and things. Well, that's a great answer. And so if you followed him all those years, many of us knew him, even though we weren't his best friends at all, or social friends, and we knew and said to ourselves, "Well, the American people never going to buy this guy." Why not? I understand my ignorance. I was part of that bonfire of the ignorant in 2016. I thought I knew the country, and I did not know the country. And I thought people knew Trump, and they did not know Trump. It's different. You ask the difference. The difference is everyone knows Trump, including his arch supporters. He is going to build that wall. He's going to throw those Mexicans out. They believe it. And as for African Americans, that's another story, too. So the difference is the difference between knowing and not knowing Donald J. Trump. People knew Hillary Clinton, and either they liked her or they didn't like her. But it was basically, her campaign was, "I'm not Trump." They're thinking, like poor old Sam Donaldson, that no one's going to elect him president, and we're wrong.
We talked about this quote earlier, and I think it's important. President Trump yesterday said in the press conference after Senator Harris was announced as the vice presidential candidate, he said, "She was my number one draft pick. She was the one I wanted." President Trump said that. What does that mean to you, Sam?
Well, you know, I think you have to interpret it. He may have just meant, if you look at it, those words by themselves, "Hey, I'm so smart, I knew he was going to pick her." Or he may have meant, "That's who I want my people to attack under the table, attack." But, you know, he doesn't have to do that. He's not going to get a significant number of African-American votes, even if the whitest white in the world had been selected as the vice presidential nominee. But she's going to bring a huge turnout of African-Americans to the Biden ticket. How can he how can he attack the ticket on the basis of her? Some of his people already wouldn't vote for the ticket otherwise because she's partially black. But they're lost anyway to the Biden-Harris ticket. I don't know what he meant. So often, I don't know what Donald J. Trump means when he says things, except he doesn't know what they mean, and he'll change his mind within a nanosecond.
We, as I've said before, we're under 90 days till this election. We do have the conventions coming up. They will be virtual. They will be different. We have the debates. I don't know if the debates matter anymore. People say Hillary Clinton won them all in 2016, and she still lost the election. And we are this close. Based on all that, is this Biden's race to lose? What would he have
to... Yes, I think you put it right, Scott. It's a race to lose. Now, in a debate... Now, Trump wanted four debates. He wanted a debate immediately because he has a way. Hell, he's a very good debater, not because of facts. He doesn't know the facts. But his manner, his appeal that in 2016, we all first thought in the first debate when... Megan savaged him over things he'd said about women. Well, that's the end of Donald Trump. We were wrong. I was wrong. That just energized people who became his base. So he'd like to do that, too. Against Joe Biden, I think Biden would keep his cool. I don't think Biden would get into a name-calling contest with him. Biden would simply continue to spell out what the facts were and to say that you were wrong on this. And Trump would... I'll tell you one thing I wanted to see in that second debate in 2016. When it was Hillary Clinton's turn to talk, and instead of sitting down, Donald J. Trump loomed behind her, striding back and forth behind her to dominate the picture and to throw her off. I wish she'd turned around and said, Donald, sit down, it's my turn. And if he didn't, I wish she'd just slapped his face. Wow! I think our view of Hillary Clinton would have gone up. I don't think Biden's going to do that. But I think he'll hold his own in the debates with Trump. And Trump will appeal to his base, but no one else.
If she had done that, it certainly would have been the headlines the next day in all the papers.
Hey, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Hey, the woman showed some spunk. He was trying to throw her off by taking her turn when it wasn't his, and she walloped him.
Sam, it is always a great pleasure to have you on this program, and I know the election's coming up, but boy, I think this is going to be a wild one, as you say, and hopefully we can talk again sometime before the election.
It's a pleasure and privilege to be with you, Scott.
Thank you, Sam.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Legendary
newsman Sam Donaldson. We're coming back with the mayor after this.
But none of them was looking down. They were all looking up head high, and I saw it. As soon as I saw that, I was already within 400.